jump up, let's get crazy. Jump up, let's get crazy. Let's get crazy. Welcome to the fifth preseason Supercoach Coach podcast of season 2017. My name's Marcus, and I'm joined again this week by FB Donkey.
G'day, mate. How's things?
Very good, thanks, mate. Hard to believe this is already the third of our four positional shows for the preseason, and 18 days left until round one kicks off at recording. So preseason's drawing to a close rather quickly, and in no time we'll be back to normal AFL season football, mate. Quite looking forward to the season kicking off, but my Supercoach team is far from locked down, that's for sure. How about yourself, mate? How are you going?
Definitely keen for the footy to start. I'm ready to go. The JLT games just aren't quite doing it for me. My team still has, I've got it narrowed down to like a few different players in each position, but the exact particulars are not there yet.
So as mentioned in previous shows, today we're covering the back line in our third positional show for the preseason. So that leaves only the forwards left for next week. And then we'll do one final rookies and recap show to round out the preseason. So week three of the JLT this week, week four next week. So we'll get the full suite of teams playing next week. And then we get one weekend off prior to kickoff. So full steam ahead. And for this week's show, we're going to cover the back line in three separate categories. First, the players who are in that top echelon, the 95 plus type defenders. Then we're going to look at players that have previously averaged 95 that are available in the back line that could return to that top six type mark. And then the final bracket would be players who haven't reached that 95 type score before, but have the potential to break out to average 95 this season. So we'll just make our way through the players. As always, we've taken some questions from Facebook and Twitter. So don't forget, you can follow us on our social media pipes and ask us questions ahead of the shows. And we've also set up for our Patreon listeners a Patreon thread on our forum that is exclusively for our supporters to ask questions that we'll sort of prioritize and make sure we get answered in some form or another. So that's new for our patrons. Mark, before we do get into the show, don't forget to our listeners out there, only 18 days left to join our ranked leagues, our open leagues, our Supercoach Coach group, and to apply for our veterans group. So not long left to get involved in the Supercoach Coach community. We give shout outs throughout the year to the people who are leading our Supercoach Coach group and who top score our group each week. So don't forget to jump on there if you want a bit of a shout out from week to week when you do well. All right, Mark.
You could be internet famous.
Yeah. Let's get straight into it. Like I said, I want to start with the 95 plus averaging players. These are the guys that last year showed the capability of being top six worthy. The top end though, Mark, of these 95 plus averages compared to the bottom end is quite different. So you've got Doherty, who scored 108 last season, but on the lower end of that, you've got your Laird types who only averaged 97, Rance 98. So there's a bit of a disparity in terms of, you know, the top three scorers, the Doherty, Simpson and Shaw from last year. And maybe the bottom end of that top six. So I think it is quite important in the back line to look for those absolute top line scorers, the guys that have potential to score 105 in the back line, because most players only seem to hit that 95 mark. That means that it draws our focus to the exceptional defenders that have that next level scoring. Doherty was the number one defender last year, clearly has that next level scoring, average 108.7 last year. Is he worth the 591k price tag? Bradley Cook has asked us that on Facebook. He's not quite sure whether to invest that much money. Thoughts, Mark?
I think that he's definitely in consideration for my team, really strong consideration. I don't think that he can keep up 108, and history says that with these premium defenders that are worth that much money, he will be cheaper at some point. So you might want to wait off and bring him in, but I do think he's young, he's still improving. Carlton, I don't think, are going to be able to play too much of a different system this year. They're still going to be, based on what we've seen so far, sort of down the bottom of the ladder, and the ball's going to be in their defensive zone a lot. So very accurate kick. He has just Supercoach game written all over him. I think he's a really good pick still, and he's strongly in consideration for my team. What do you think about the price? That's probably the only thing that would put you off.
The price does put me off, but as I mentioned, there's a big difference between, you know, those top three scorers and then sort of that next rung. So even though his price does come with a premium, it's for good reason. And if you look through the rest of the 95 plus averages, there's not many people in his mold, in the sense that, like you mentioned, Mark, he's really young. He's only turning 24 this year, which is pretty crazy.
And in his prime.
Yeah. He hasn't even played 100 games yet. Last year, he only just ticked over the 50 game mark, averaged 109 9 in his fourth season. There's no reason why he can't keep improving. And even if he doesn't, even if he slides a little bit, I'd still be happy to pay $591,000 for a bloke that I'm pretty comfortable will average at least 105 and therefore be in the top three defenders for the year.
Yeah, that seems fair, mate.
Next question is from Andrew Frawley on Twitter. Are you tempted to look past some of the older players this year? He's talked about Boyd, $563,000, Simpson, $579,000, Shaw, $577,000, Montagna, $538,000. Is there any merit to passing on these sorts of blokes? They tend to come with a little bit more injury history as well. We've talked about this quite a lot over the last couple of years, but there's definitely a changing of the guard, especially in the back line. It feels like maybe this would be the year to pass on some of these older blokes because they'd be fairly close to falling off the cliff, I would have thought. Shaw would be the only one that I'm tempted by, and I mean that quite seriously. You know, Simpson, Boyd, Montagna, they've been stalwarts for a really long time, and over the last couple of years, except for Simpson last year, Boyd and Montagna, for one, have definitely started to slide a little bit.
I'm exactly the same as you, mate. I'm the only one out of those guys that I'm considering is Heath Shaw, and I'm strongly considering him. For me, it'd be out of Shaw or Doherty. I may even end up taking both of those guys, depending on how many premiums I take. Don't forget that it was only a few years ago that Shaw was always going to miss a game, always going to get suspended. But he's played 22 the last 2 years, so getting a bit of durability happening in a Giants team, he is not going to want to be missing games. He's going to be want to be there for the finals. So, yeah, I think that Heath out of those guys is the one I'd be considering. I know that Montagna and Boyd probably likely to miss a couple of games here or there. They've both had, I think, calf injuries in the past, which the old man's injury, which could hold them back a little bit. So, I think that you're right that Shaw out of those guys is the one that stands out. And I will be looking a little bit at a changing of the guard in the defence.
I think Shaw turning 32 this year is slightly concerning, but even though, like you mentioned, Mark, in the past struggled to play 22, did brain fade type stuff, got tagged quite a lot. The last 2 years, played 22 games each of the last 2 years, averaged 112 and 106, and really ruled out a lot of those inconsistent games that he used to have, like the 40s here and there. So his basement scoring-wise seems to be about that 70 to 80 mark, but his upside is that 150 that we know he can get when he just goes off the chain. So
200 that he got last year.
Yeah, absolutely. So to be honest, he's right up there for me in terms of starting picks, similar to you tossing up between Doherty and Shaw. If I had the starting budget to include two set-and-forget type defenders, I think that I'd be fairly happy locking both of these players away as sort of your D1, D2 for the season, and I'd be pretty confident that they'd end up there.
Yep.
So we've talked about some old blokes and blokes that have the high scoring potential in the back line. The next guy potentially doesn't have that top line scoring potential because he's a key position player. David Siddles is asking about our thoughts on Alex Rance, priced at $536,000. He averaged 98 last year.
Massive.
Yeah. By far and away, he's the best key back in the league, in my opinion. His ability to attack as well for Supercoach is absolutely fantastic, but his ability to defend and win those one-on-one contests and intercept marks is brilliant as well. We recommend not picking key position players, even in the forward line where they can kick goals. Rance is probably the only key position player that I really do think about very seriously starting in 2017.
Okay.
Are you considering him at all?
No, he hasn't been in my consideration at all, really. And that's not really good reasons for that, just that I've limited it down to four or so players and he's just not one of them. I don't think he provides a ton of value at that price. He has sort of been even improving again the last 2 years. His average is still going up, so we might not be at the peak for Rance. And you would think that the ball might spend a fair bit of time in the Richmond back line this year. So, look, I think he's still a good pick, just not someone that's in consideration for me.
I think a good reason not to pick a player like Rance is he'll have his games where he goes off the chain, takes heaps of intercept marks and drives the ball out of the back line and scores 140. And he'll have quiet games as well where he just has to play a shutdown role on a Buddy Franklin type and might score 60. And that's a good reason potentially not to go for key position players at the start of the season, is that they are more likely than a consistent player that relies on consistent number of possessions each week. They're more likely than those sorts of players to dip in price and therefore present value as a trade-in option as you move it throughout the season. But I think it should be called out that in the last couple of years, even though he hasn't been a particularly exciting pick, he's been very, very close to the top six averaging defenders. So somebody that gets overlooked a little bit.
Yep, I just think that there's a bit of competition for those spots. So you're looking at, like, if we've got Shaw and Doherty that we're strongly considering, and you're not going to have too many premiums down there, and then you've got value like Adams and Laird, the next two after Rance in price. It's pretty hard to pick Rance over those two, I think.
Adams, Mark, was the player that I said I was most excited about picking in the back line when we did our first episode back. Cam Lock
Still
is.
thinking that?
Yeah, I certainly am. I think the game against Fremantle yesterday, he had like 21 possessions, kicked the goal, started the most centre clearances with 16 out of the Collingwood team. Next best was Pendlebury, Treloar, 15 each. So it's looking like he'll spend a bit more time in the midfield this year, and I think that's only positive signs from our point of view. I mean, I love getting midfielders in the back line, especially a young'un. So pretty psyched, mate. How about yourself?
So he was 100% locked in my team for a while. I'm getting just a little bit cold feet because of his durability issues, which is not anything new. Like, he has struggled to play out of season and does seem to struggle from these soft tissue injuries. So that's probably the one thing holding him back in my team. I do think that if he's playing a lot of midfield, he does seem like a guy that could go 105. And I mean, even if he does get injured but goes 105 for 10 rounds or something, then it'd still be a good pick. So there's probably four players in consideration for me and those looking to average 105, and he's definitely one of them right on the edge of my team at the moment.
Collingwood have a fair case that they might improve this year, and he's played 75 games, averaged 98 in 2015, 97 last year. That's 2 years in a row averaging around that mark. I think 75 games in, getting close to that 100 game mark in his sixth season this year, there's a very good chance that he'll break out. So I definitely understand the concerns, but I think the upside is potentially so large. Like, if he breaks out to that 105 mark, even if he gets injured at some point, still might be worthwhile starting him.
Yeah.
But I understand those are fair points that you have made, Mark.
But he is one of very few genuine midfielders that are available in defense, like genuine premium midfielders. So that does give him an edge over some of the other guys.
You did mention Rory Laird as well there, Mark. He's one that has also really improved over the last couple of years, broke out from 60 to a 93 average in 2015. And we all, you know, sort of stood up and paid attention. Last year, still stepped it up again to that 97 mark. And really, before he got injured around round six, I think he missed a patch of about 5 games. He was looking really good and consistent as well. His downside, like, he rarely scores below 70, 75, but he has the potential to hit that 110, 120 mark quite regularly.
Yeah.
Considering his upward trajectory, he would have been sort of a lock, you would have thought, for 2017, you know, played 72 games. So he does look like a good pick, but he's not really been touted a lot this preseason. Another bloke that's not potentially getting his fair attention.
Well, I think it depends who you talk to, mate. I know a lot of people that are very, very big Laird fans.
Yep.
I guess his consistency is awesome. That's really good. I mean, I don't have many other Adelaide players or Adelaide premiums in consideration. I still think that they'll do quite well. So that's another reason to pick him. I kind of wonder if he's a rebounding defender. Like, is he going to have the Doherty sort of upside? Like, can he go 105? We haven't seen evidence that that's really likely to happen before. He's going to need probably a few big games in there. So if he does get some more midfield minutes, which is talked about, because they've got probably a few more options down back there, he could definitely turn out to be a good pick. He's definitely in strong consideration for my team. I guess a little bit worried that a lot of his kicks are quite short. I mean, he doesn't go long very often, so that can sort of limit his scoring ability. But look, I don't really have anything negative to say about him.
I reckon that last point's probably the main one, Mark, and there's a very fair point. The short kicks does hurt him. He had 35-plus possessions, I think, 3 times last year. He averaged 27 possessions per game. As a backline player, that is heaps. And he had a kick-to-handball ratio of approximately 1-to-1, averaged 7 marks a game, and 2 tackles. Like, based off those stats, you would have thought, hang on, this bloke should be averaging maybe even 105, but he only averaged 97 in the end. And I think that's sort of the next step that he needs to take to really become one of the top defenders in the whole of the AFL is how can he turn the number of possessions that he has into more dangerous possessions? Because he had 36 possessions against Brisbane last year, 9 marks. Guess how many Supercoach points, Mark? 96.
Yeah,
you would think that somebody racking up numbers like that, it'd be a fair bit more. So
sounds like a little bit of chipping around, uncontested sort of stuff going on there.
Yeah.
Look, I mean, he does put his head over the ball, he's definitely willing to get in there and do that. Like, he's not going to be able to improve his possession count a lot from 27 as an average, you think. So, like you said, he's going to have to improve the efficiency of them or improve the scoring impact of them by meters gained sort of stuff. So, I guess that if you're going to pick him, you're gambling that he's going to be able to do that. What do you think about Adams versus Laird? I'm guessing that you're leading to Adams just because the upside is bigger.
Yeah. I think that they're both pretty comfortable to stay around that 95 type mark, but yeah, I'm more tempted about. Actually, having said that though, I think you'd be more confident about Laird's injury history, and that might play into it a little bit. Yeah. If you're more confident in Laird playing 22 games, it's a pretty tough one. I've excited about Adams, and therefore the momentum has me moving toward a midfielder available as a defender. But
yeah,
when you put them next to each other, it's a lot closer than I would have thought, I think.
Yeah, and look, those two guys are rotating in and out of my team at the moment. It's really up to Doherty, Shaw, Adams and Laird, picking two of them. I mean, it depends which day you talk to me to which ones I've got. I think at the moment I've got Doherty and Laird. I'm going to be disappointed if I don't get Adams in there. So I guess it really depends on how many defensive premiums you're going to pick, whether you're going to pick any value picks, which we're probably going to talk about pretty soon. And I think that if I'm picking the super premiums, I'm picking from those four. I think it'd be safe picking from those four. And I probably wouldn't be taking more than two, because I think you're just spending too much in your defense if you are doing that.
Agree with that. Last player sort of in this bracket that I want to discuss. I mean, I don't think he's quite broken out to this level consistently yet, but JJ basically did it last year. I mean, you've got to consider the fact that he had injury-affected games, but he broke out from 77 to 94. He scored 130, 123, 70, and 97 before getting injured in that last game. Was out for a little while, but when he came back in round 15, he still, once he got back into the swing of things after a pretty significant hamstring injury, round 19 he scored 100, round 20 he scored 110, round 22 130. So you know he did get back up to that high scoring once he got back into the groove of football, and that's a fair effort considering his time out of the game. I think when you look at Laird versus JJ also gets a lot more mileage out of his kicks than potentially Laird does. Lots of those long penetrating kicks that worth heaps of Supercoach points. Do you think JJ can really consolidate on his move into a premium last year, and Western Bulldogs looking like a top four team again this year? That could be good points going toward him.
Well, I think after the Norm Smith medal, he's going to be riding high on confidence, but then that might also draw more opposition attention towards him because he's so valuable running off that halfback flank. And I know that the Dogs have got a lot of other players you might shut down, but he may be the crucial one that they sort of do sit someone on going forward. And we haven't really seen that happen too much to JJ, so there's probably a little bit of unknown with that one. And I think that he is probably one that, you're right, he's got the upside. There's not really any reason that I could give you not to pick him, but probably not being talked about that much in the preseason at the moment.
I mean, he had a bit 16 kicks to 8 handballs was his average last year kick to handball ratio, so very, very attractive in terms of potential upside. I think something to note is that Robert Murphy will be slotting back into that back line this year and potentially stealing some points from JJ, but yeah, definitely a very potentially attractive option as well. All right, out of everyone that we've talked about so far, a 1-2-3 mark.
My top three from those guys, I'd probably have Doherty first, and then Adams and Laird, just because they're the three out of the four that I've sort of mentioned that are most likely to make my team. What about you?
I think Adams number one for me. Doherty be pretty close to that, but the potential of additional value with Adams has me putting him first, and then Doherty would be second. That age and the upward trajectory that he has left in him, the sort of player profile's not really available with anyone else. And then it'd be Laird third, and then honourable mentions to Shaw and JJ. All right, on to the next category of players. These are blokes that have averaged 95 before in seasons past, but haven't or didn't in 2016. But we think they might have the potential to get back there this year. So first question is from Adrian P. Muldoon. Vince, as a POD, he's priced at 501,000. He's averaged 95 and 98 in seasons 2014 and 2015 playing for Melbourne. Last year spent a bit more time in the back line and averaged 92. Do you think there's potential for him to get back to that 95 plus average and therefore be worthwhile picking?
I think that there is. I think he's still going to be playing as a defender mainly. Like that, he's looked pretty good over there, down there in the first couple of JLT games. So, can he average 95 as a defender? I think he probably can. I mean, Melbourne are on the improve. He has a good scoring history as well. There's probably a bit of luck involved. Like, does he have one or two down games, and how big is his big game? Because I know he's had some really big games in the past. So, I think that he's someone that you could gamble on. Good player to pick up in draft, I think.
I think the fact that he's only averaged 95 plus in three of his 11 seasons has me a little bit cautious about him. He's also turning 32 this year, which is something to keep in mind. I think that if Melbourne are a top eight team, then there's a very good chance he'd be a 95 plus averager. My main question would be, is he worth the risk if the upside looks relatively limited? Like, he's never averaged more than 98 in his entire career. So the most you'll get is a 6 point increase. The last two seasons, he has missed at least one game, which you have to factor in as potentially a 60. So his average comes down potentially by another couple of points if you factor one missed game, which is fair at his age of 32. And so I just think he seems decent, but I don't know if overall there's enough potential upside to take him on as a risk. I understand he's available in the back line, which he's not been, you know, in seasons past and that sort of thing, but I'm not 100% sure if he is worth the pick, considering the volume of questions we've had on Vince. That there's clearly quite a lot of people out there in the public that are considering him.
Okay. Yeah, I think there's better alternatives. He seems like a bit of a like an okay pick.
Yeah, we got four questions about him, and I think
Wow.
there was only like three or four players that we got that many questions on, and yeah, he was one of them. So anyway, next bloke, he's averaged 95 plus in seasons past. I believe he did it for yourself, Mark, in 2015, averaged 95. That's Tom McDonald. Last year, his average dropped a little bit to 89, so still close to a premium, but not quite good enough. If he returns to that 95 mark, and there's 6 points of improvement left in him, that could potentially be good enough. He's turning 25 this year. Well, just ticked over to 104 career games. Key position player is a concern. Thoughts about him as a potential selection, Mark?
If you know what happened to him between rounds 2 and 6 last year, and you know that that's not going to happen again, then he's a great pick. He scored 6 out of the last 8 games. He was over 100, including 4 of them over 110. So massive, massive run home. Really consistent from about round 6 as well, like posted heaps of 90s in that period. The same issues that we brought up with Rance, but I guess because he's a little bit cheaper, maybe there's a little bit less risk associated with him. I think that he, as far as scoring goes, he's in a very similar territory to Rance with his potential. So, and he can definitely go on huge runs. And I think by memory, a couple of years ago when he did average quite well, his big runs was right from the start of the season, and he'd had a couple of big preseason games as well. So, look, I think that there's definitely some potential in T-Mac. He's not someone that I'm considering personally for my side, but given the scores that we've seen from him and the fact that he came home so strongly at the end of last year, I think it'd be tough to make an argument against him, really.
My argument against him would be the fact that even though his upside potentially matches Rance's, I think his downside is probably worse off than Rance's. He had, I think, 5 games under 70 last year, and that's not to say that doesn't make him a good selection. I just think that he's the sort of bloke that offers plenty of value similar to Rance throughout the season, and so by picking him right up front, you might lose out on a cheap upgrade at 380,000. Which he can get to quite often over the course of a season. So I'd hold off on just off the basis that he might present good value for you later on in the season.
Yeah, but like I said, like he might not. He could just do have that run at the start, and then you kind of miss out on everything. So if he goes on a really hot run at the start, I probably wouldn't be picking him up because he's a guy that you'd want to get for under 500,000.
Yeah. All right, next couple of players to talk about are a bit older, have shown 95 plus in the past, but last year both had injury affected seasons. So Hooley only played the 12 games last year, averaged 95 in 2015, dropped back down to 90 last year. Luke Hodge, available back in the back line again, averaged 108 in 2015, last year dropped down to 88. His main question mark is his injury history. He's never been particularly durable, but especially at this stage of his career, he's a big risk. Either of those two blokes tempt you, Mark?
No, not really. Look, Hodge probably a lot more than Hooley, but I know that his upside is massive, but he's only averaged over 100 once in the last 5 seasons and played 8 games, 20 games, 19 games, 17 and 13. So I think that you would need him to average 108 for it to be worthwhile just because the injury risk is so high.
Yeah, Hodge, what, turning 33 this year? Yeah, definitely agrees. Probably not worth his starting price point, but if he drops down because of an injury-affected game, I have a feeling I'll be tempted at some point in the season. He has been a fantasy favourite for many years, hasn't he, Mark?
He definitely has. It burnt both of us quite a few times as well, but also helped us out on different occasions. Look, he's definitely a bit like McDonald, like the sort of guy that you pick him and he goes on a huge run at the start. He could be a huge advantage for your team. I just don't think that that's very likely to happen. It's definitely in the realm of possibility, though.
Yeah. All right, the next bloke, we've got a question here from Shane Medcalf about thoughts on Hamish Hartlett, priced at $428,000. I think I've already mentioned him earlier in this preseason. Quite excited about the fact that he's available in the back line. He averaged 101 in 2015 and has had five seasons averaging 90+. Played 122 games, vice-captain. We know the quality of this bloke. He struggles with staying on the park, though, and consistency staying in games. Sometimes he can just sort of get tagged out of games and not get to use his booming kick for Supercoach points. But surely at 428K, having dropped off 23 points in average last year, presents a lot of value and is pretty damn tempting.
Yeah, he was one of the first players I picked. I think we were both very excited about him only just a few weeks ago, and we've only seen him play once since then and just didn't really get involved in that game. But that's not, I mean, it's preseason. That's not a huge deal, I don't think. I guess that one of the reasons why I've cooled on Hartlett a little bit is there's probably been a few more defensive rookies become available, so I don't have as many spots for premiums in my defense. Looking probably more guns and rookies, looking to get the top end of those premiums rather than taking the value guys. But he's got a lot to prove. I've just cooled on him a lot myself. He's very unlikely to make my team now.
Yeah, my biggest concern with him is he's played 22 games once over the last eight seasons. But that season in 2015 that he did play 22 games, you know, there was talk that he's been working on his soft tissue injuries and his hamstrings to get himself to that point. And then last year seemed to go backwards with that a little bit. So if you're confident that his fitness base was such that he might be able to knock out 21, 22 games this year, then you'd pick him. Otherwise, you wouldn't. But in terms of a pure value proposition, at his price point, I don't really see him averaging less than 90. He's only done that once in the last 6 years, and his upside is potentially 105+. Like, we've not seen him truly break out. That's fair. That's probably going quite far, but he's averaged 101 before. We've talked about him being a very dangerous midfielder. If he were to truly take himself to a top 50 player in the AFL, like, the sky is the limit for this bloke. So how likely it is another conversation. Absolutely.
Less than 1%. Yeah, I think that there's a really good chance with Hartlett that you pick him at that price, he ends up averaging 91 to 93 and he's a bit meh.
Yeah, like Rich just, last
it's
year.
Okay, but it's not the worst thing for your team, but if he gets injured, it is the worst thing. So not for me at the moment.
All right, next couple of blokes didn't play at all last season. One, because he was suspended, that was Hibbard. Now at Melbourne for the first time, swapped clubs over that suspension period. And then Robert Murphy, after doing his ACL last year, is back available for selection this year. Both have averaged 95+ before. Bob Murphy was averaging 103 before he went down injured. Last best average was 99 in 2013, but averaged around 90 in 2014, 2015. Hibbard in the past has averaged 96 in 2013, normally good for 90-ish type score if he doesn't get injured. They're not quite your top-end premiums, but there's a little bit of embedded value in them at their starting price and therefore they're in consideration. Are you tempted by either or not your cup of tea?
No, they're not. I just don't think that they've got enough history of like that 95+ premium scoring. And then maybe you don't need 95+ from them, but I think that the defenders that you're picking in your team, you should be hoping for that at this stage. I know Bob went for 100 in the first three games last year, but he's had a long career and done a lot of good stuff, but only averaged over 95 once. So, and look, the chances of him doing it this year, coming back from knee reconstruction, seemed pretty low. Obviously, everyone loves him and he'd be fun to have in your team, but I think I'd want to be paying more than 340, 350 than 390 for him. And Hibbard, similar. I think that if he has his best season, he might get you a 96 average and turn out to be a good pick as long as he doesn't get injured, but the chances of that happening, not overly high again. So I can understand why people are picking both these guys, but they haven't been in consideration for me at all.
So out of the guys that we've talked about who have the potential to get back to a 95 plus, could you give me a 1-2?
I think the two that probably interest me the most would be Tom McDonald and Hamish Hartlett, even though I've raised doubts on them. Those two guys seem most likely to get to the 95 plus for me. And if you really, really want to gamble, Hodgie, I guess.
Yeah, I'll go Hartlett 1, T-Mac 2, and probably wouldn't consider the rest as well. I know I was tempted by Hibbert earlier on, but I think it's fairly similar to the Hooley Vince type, where even if they do break out to that 95-plus mark, and understanding Hibbert's a bit cheaper at that 400K, whereas Hooley's 480 and Vince is 500, still probably doesn't have enough value to be worth that risk, considering each of those blokes have injury histories as well. So agree with that. We'll move on to the next bracket. These are blokes that have the potential to break out to that 95 plus bracket. Traditionally, the riskiest area to pick from, especially in the back line, there's been plenty of cases of super coaches picking blokes that have averaged 90 multiple seasons in the hope that they'll average 95 to 100. So they pour in, you know, like 480,000, and these players end up just treading water for the season, and you throw a fair bit of money in the bin. So I want to approach these blokes with a little bit of caution, but also understand that we've been talking about the changing of the guard for a while now, and these are the likely candidates to step up if there were to be a change of the guard. So I don't want to be too dismissive, but at the same time, let's call out the fact that these more expensive mid-price players come with a fair bit of inherent risk to them. All right, the first bloke off the run sheet at Dotty 7 is asked about Hurts as a D supporter, but is Howe looking okay for a D3 spot? So I mentioned before, we got a lot of questions about Vince. We also had a lot of questions about Adams. Howe is probably the other main guy that we got a heap of questions about. Yeah. I personally haven't been looking too seriously at him, but have you, Mark? Last year, moved to Collingwood and averaged 92, a career high.
Yeah, look, I'd have him ahead of Vince personally, and he's someone that if I was picking four defenders, he'd be a really good chance of actually being in my team. I think, like, if you look at his scoring from last year, he came to Collingwood because he wanted to play as a forward, started with 37, 53, 86, and 55. Then they had a bunch of injuries down back, so he had to move down back, and he posted 500s in a row. Only posted three more for the season after that, but he has those big scores in him. Like, he can go 130+. He only scored sort of below 60 once he went into the back line. I think he'll be playing back there again this year. He's pretty durable, actually. Like, I know that he missed a couple of games at the start of last year, but has played 22 in three of the four seasons before that. So I think there's some natural improvement and progression in his scoring there. I find it very hard to find a reason not to pick Howe, and I think he does have the upside of the 95 plus being a really good chance, and it could go even higher, especially if Collingwood improves. So yeah, I think he's actually a really good pick. I guess if you pick Adams and then you're picking players like Pendlebury and Treloar and maybe Grundy, like, I do end up with too many pies in your side. That's quite a strong possibility, but I mean, he's got the durability factor over Adams. He could score similarly. So yeah, I think there's a lot of reasons to pick Howe this season.
Jumping Jeremy Howe. I mean, we know that a lot of these backline players that score a heap of points actually score them not necessarily just off the back of driving the ball out of the backline, but also in the intercept marks. We've seen Hooker in the past, even as a bloke that doesn't attack as much, score big points off that. Howe is an interesting one in the sense that he can score points off potentially some of his footwork, but he scores a lot of points off good intercept marks off the backline. Last year, his games that he had seven or more marks in, I think 9 marks in round 7, 108 points. 7 marks in round 8, 135 points. 11 marks in round 9, 104 points. 11 marks in round 10, 125 points. Like, and he has another few games where he has 10, 11, 18 in round 22 against Gold Coast, 130 points. He gets so many of those big points from intercept marks, which is pretty exciting as a halfback player. That's something that's pretty hard to tag out of a game, isn't it, Mark? The ability to float and pick out marks. So from that point of view, I really, really like his game. You'd be concerned with him potentially being a swing man if he's pivoting up forward and then back into the back line, whether or not that leads to durability concerns. But absolutely, if he's a halfback player, there's no reason why he can't be a top 6 averager. And in fact, if you do take just purely his games that he did play in the back line as opposed to the first 4 when he was in the forward line, he'd be comfortably in the top 6 averages for the back line last year. So So definitely very tempting. At 501,000 though, there's not much discount there. Averaged 92 last season. I think that the most you'd hope for is 100. So still not a surefire pick by any means. Whether or not you're more wanting to just sort of pay the 590 for Doherty or the 570 for Shaw to get more of a sure thing, that's probably where the decision comes down to. Like, is there enough value in how to go one step down?
Yeah, and you're right. That's the really good point there. That's why, like, Doherty, Shaw, Laird, and Adams are just, it's hard to go beyond them for me, because these guys that we're talking about, a lot of them aren't way cheaper. So the Laird, Adams, the other forwards, they seem more likely to be top six defenders than sort of any of these guys. And so the discount really isn't there to be taking a risk on a lot of them, which is why I've kind of limited my options, I guess.
Hmm. All right, next bloke, Zach Williams. Gav Blows has asked about him. He's at 480,000 and a little bit more of a smoky. I know in the past, Mark, you've really been attracted by the X factor that Williams can bring to a game. He's turning 23 this year. He's played 51 career games and averaged 88, and it really was quite a breakout season for him. The previous high was 12 games played in 2015. Do you think he can consolidate on last year and step it up a notch again, or will it take him a little bit longer to establish himself consistently? That probably is his question mark, consistency.
Yeah, I think if he played for a different team, I'd be picking him for sure. Last year, he had the Dustin Martin sort of thing where at halftime or quarter time, he was the top scorer almost every week, but then he would fade as the game went on. So I think that he would be playing midfield at a lot of other clubs. It's just the Giants, the spread of score of the Giants and the amount of talent that they have in the midfield and how difficult it will be for him to get any time there. So look, I think that that's a no for me as a result, but it wouldn't surprise me to see him averaging 95 plus in the future.
Yeah, he's unlikely to make my team, probably not to start. Next player, this guy really surprised me about how many questions we got on him. I think he got four questions. I've taken the one from Jib Rangers here on Twitter. Is Tui Lumumba version 2.0, priced at 443,000. Seventh year breakout at a new club. And the reason why I chose Jib Rangers' question was because I thought Harry Lumumba was an interesting comparison. I don't remember him working out particularly well, Mark. I think he was being touted in the preseason when he swapped to Melbourne. But if I'm looking at his average now, he averaged 88 in 2013 for Collingwood, 77 in 2014, swapped over to Melbourne and averaged 63. So you would hope he's not a Lumumba, because that means he's going to turn out pretty awfully. But Tui, yeah, it seems like an interesting one. Seventh year breakout, surely just because he swapped clubs, he doesn't quite meet the criteria. I understand he had a really good JLT game one, but yeah, I'm a bit confused about this one.
Yeah, I'm not confused at all, mate. Out of all the cheaper guys, he's actually gone way ahead of Hamish Hartlett in consideration for my team. I think that if you look at, it might have been the last four or five games of last year, he had around 100 in those games. He's had another 27 touches today in the second JLT, just hitting targets, coming out of defense. Like, you look at him and looking at like players like Thurlow and Ruggles and other players playing in the Geelong back line, Tui's the offensive guy coming out of there. He is the one that will run the lines and kick long. And I think that with Enright gone, that there's a role for him there. I'm close to being a believer of Tui, and I don't think he's anything like a Lumumba, because Lumumba was just a shit truck. But Tui, I think, has some genuine talent. Yeah, I think that he's a very legitimate pick at the moment, mate.
Yeah, okay. I mean, based on what I've seen as a Geelong supporter, I'm super excited. I'm very much looking forward to him coming on board. I completely agree with what you're saying in terms of our half back line options really not coming on in recent years. We've tried Smets in there, who's now gone. We've had Thurlow, who's been injured. We've had Buse, who's moved into the forward line. We have had Ruggles, whose disposal efficiency isn't quite sharp enough. There's definitely a role for him. I just think at 440,000, you need to be so confident this bloke's going to average 95 plus to be worth it. Otherwise, he's going to be that awkwardly priced player that you've got to deal with. I'm more confident in Powell, and I'd rather pay the extra 60,000 to be a bit more certain than take such a big risk with Tui. I mean, if he was at 360k maybe, but I'd think that you'd hope Tui breaks out to be worth about 530 by the end of the season, and that's like 90k of value. Is that really worth the fact that he's in the seventh year? I don't know. Definitely the way he's played the JLT, I understand the attention. I think this will be a good one to come back to for our last show, Mark. See where we land on him in a couple weeks' time. All right, next player also has had a lot of attention. Again, man, the risk profile of him really, really concerns me. But Callum Mills, we got a lot of questions about him. Kane Arnold's the one question that I've taken. At 420K, will he lift his average enough to be relevant? A second-year player, Mark. Averaged 77 in his first season. I understand he's a talent, but second-year players very rarely work out. Do you think he's worth the risk?
Sometimes they do. Bontempelli, yep. I recall.
Agree. Selwood, Pendlebury. It's rare, but these are, you know, you have to be basically one of the best players in the AFL to be a second year breakout.
Yeah. And I think that some people are saying that Mills might be close to that. I guess the thing that worries me is that he's had a bit of extra midfield time in the JLT games, and he's unlikely to get that during the season. But then, like, his intercept possessions have been really good, and Sydney are crying out for someone to play that role across halfback. So I think that I can understand why people are picking him. He's not in consideration for my team, though. I think that, yeah, there's other players available at that price that are maybe, like, I'd still have Hartlett ahead of him. Like, they're more sort of likely to hold that good average and play out the season. So I can understand the temptation, but yeah, he's maybe one that if he was 50K cheaper, you might pick him, or the risks are quite high with this pick and the upside maybe isn't, like, he's not going to average 105. So he's unlikely to burn people that don't pick him.
Yeah, I mean, Dane Rampey, his fellow teammate, all Australian in his fourth year playing footy, only averaged 86. Like, I just think it's just jumping the gun way too much picking a player like Mills. We talk about Rampey being a risky pick just because he's in his fifth season doesn't mean he'll average 95. And he's already had three seasons averaging more than Mills. So, I mean, if I were to take a mid-price risk in Sydney and looking for a halfback player, it'd definitely be Rampey over Mills. So the next player I want to talk about, Ricky Henderson. He's moved clubs over to Hawthorn. He has averaged 85 plus previously in 2013. Has shown some scoring potential, but never really got consistency of games or even of roles. There's a lot of competition for the halfback role at Adelaide while he was there, and he kept getting pushed out of it. Do you see him playing a halfback role effectively at Hawthorn? Do you think there's potential for improvement there?
Yeah, maybe someone to consider for drafts, but the injury history, the up and down scoring history, it's the risks are just way too high.
All right, last bloke now, Mark. Jack Martin, is he worth a look at? Billy Flenley's asked about him on Facebook. He's a forward back, which is a bit interesting. Got that DPP status. In his sort of fourth season now, can he break out, Mark?
It looks like he might be playing a bit more midfield time. We haven't seen the full Suns midfield out there yet, though, but it looks like he's just about ready to move into that area of the ground, and he's a class above when you watch him. You can tell why people think that he might be one of the best players in the AFL one day. And so the potential is definitely there, and at 400,000, I guess you're getting a huge discount. The risk is also massive as well, and you'd need him to be really locking in a whole bunch of midfield minutes and not have any down games and not get injured. And so there's too many reasons why you wouldn't pick him. Another good player to consider in draft.
Yeah. Played 21 games last year, hit 20 plus disposals on only 4 occasions. So 404,000 is extremely risky. You'd have to be a real Martin fan to take the punt there. All right, to wrap up this section, Mark, if you have to give a top 1, 2, 3 for this category potential to break out to 95, how would you go about that?
I think Howe is the standout, is very strongly in consideration. Then I'd have Tui, and then I guess Mills maybe in that last spot. I just don't want to come across as too dismissive of Ricky Henderson either. Like, I can understand why people would pick him. He's shown amazing scoring potential over short periods before, but the risks are just too high.
Yeah. All right, last question to wrap up the show, Mark. This one's about structure. This question's from Cam Locke on Twitter. What, in your opinion, is the best structure to take into round one in your back line?
Yeah.
We tend to wrap up each of our positional shows with where we are structurally. I've had a lot of posts on social media saying that a lot of people are playing 3 premiums and maybe 1 mid-price or 4 premiums. And most people seem to be looking at least 2 rookies. The call out was there's a lot of defensive rookies. Are you looking at similar, Mark?
I've had 1 premium in my back line at different times in the last couple of weeks and the rest rookies. So it's really going to come down to those last couple of weeks and where the rookies are, because they definitely seem to be more likely to be in the back line. And I think that you really just got to take them where they are. Otherwise, you're going to end up with a lot of mid-prices in your team in order to counter that. So I probably haven't had more than 2 premiums in my defense for quite a while. And so I'm looking probably just taking 2 guns and I might chuck a mid-pricer into that third spot. And whether that's a mid-pricer like Zach Jack Toohey sort of type, or it's a mid price of one of the real cheap guys like Thurlow. I'm not quite sure at this stage. But yeah, I don't think I'd have more than three premiums. What about you, mate?
At the moment, I've got two sort of premiums. So that's your, you know, your Doherty, Laird, Adam, Shaw type price point. And then I've got one mid-pricer around that 440K mark. So, you know, one of your Hibbards or Hartletts. And then I've got Thurlow at the moment at that D4 position. But I think we'll discuss him together, the rookies, because he's around that sort of rookie type price point anyway. And then I've got rookies for the rest of it. So sounds pretty similar to most at the moment.
Yeah, I think that yours and what you're describing of the public teams are probably just that little bit deeper, looking at like 3.5 premiums or so.
All right, Mark, anything else to mention in the back line before I wrap up this week's show?
Look, we've discussed a heap of players. There's almost certainly going to be two different players that are going to completely surprise us, and we're going to have missed the signs maybe, or just going to completely break out, because that's what happens in defense most years, that there's a couple of sort of unpredictable, just huge, huge advancements in scoring, and people just have crazy years. So I'm sure that there's going to be a couple like that, but picking that guy that does it, I guess when you get it right, it has a huge outcome for you. But as you discussed during the show, I think you sort of miss maybe 2 out of every 3 times or 3 out of every 4 times picking that player. So ultimately, it might not be in your interest trying to.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess that's my main thoughts.
For me, it's that, and I've mentioned this in seasons past, so in 2017, I think this will come as no surprise, because it's really, we've seen some of this develop already, but feel like the changing of the guard is definitely here in the back line. Instead of Boyd, Simpson, Shaw, Montagna, I'm more tempted by Doherty, Adams, Laird, and JJ. Instead of Hooley, Hodge, and Vince, I'm more tempted by Hartlett, T-Mac, and Hibbard. Instead of Toohey, I'm more attracted by Jeremy Howe, for example. I just think it's time to pick some new blood and hope that they can break out in the back line. And I think the winds are changing, and that's the way I'll approach this year. And not only for the fact that I get to pick more exciting, different options in the back line, but also I hate dealing with injuries in the back line. I feel like it's...
Is that why you've got Adams at number one?
Well, you got to look at the upside sometimes and get a little bit excited, Mark. But you know what I mean? When you... dealing with an injury in the back line and your value options are blokes that are averaging 90, 95, it's just not exciting at all. So I'm wanting to just sort of lock away young guns that hopefully can step it up to that next level and not have to trade in your Rances and some of those old guard that seem to perennially come in and come out and get injured and that sort of deal. So yeah, hopefully... less injuries in the back line, Mark.
Good luck, mate.
All right. Don't forget, if you have questions for us as a follow-up, you can always pose them to us on Facebook and Twitter. We will collate sort of the follow-up questions for our rookies and recap show. We've got our forward line show and then that rookie recap show, and that's it. If you're a Patreon, don't forget, head over to supercoachcoach.com.au/forums. We've started up a thread there for you to ask essentially the question of the week. We'll prioritize our Patreon supporters' questions, and thank you very much for your support there. We're going to try and do a little bit extra. We'll do one preseason Patreon exclusive show as well. And we're taking questions for that at the moment. So if you're a Patreon supporter, you can pose us your question. And if you're not, patreon.com/supercoachcoach if you want to support us. Anything else you want to mention before I wrap up, Mark?
No, mate. I guess the next week it's Cats versus Bombers. That'll be interesting.
Yeah. So I think we're going to get together, hopefully, Mark, and watch the footy and have a bit of a live recording instead of over Skype together for the forward show. So I'm looking forward to that.
All right, mate.
All right. Have a good week. We'll catch you all next week. See ya.
See ya. See ya.